A lifetime of training, practice, study, hard work. Through discipline, some achieve excellence, mastery, fulfillment, self-actualization. What can we learn from their beginnings, discoveries, motivations, and falls? How do they dust themselves off and resume their journey? During these interviews, stories, and conversations, we reveal their intrinsic drive. Comfortable with a pen and paper from an early age, Becky Karish grew up writing poetry, creating art, and telling stories. After early success with her writing and poetry, during college she experienced a 15-year wilderness period, leaving her unable to write. This extremely talented poet, who learned the power of systems from a childhood friend, longed to find a process to harness her muse. After 4 years of studying the gateless writing method, Becky's love of writing was rekindled during a gateless writer's training course with Suzanne Kingsbury. Becky is the founder of the Read to Me Literary Arts website, where she teaches group writing salons and individual coaching. Becky is the founder and host of the Read to Me podcast, where you can listen to her magical, soothing, and healing voice as she narrates stories, literary works, and poetry. Becky is a certified teacher of the Gateless Writing Method and has led more than 250 writing salons. She's worked as a farmer, teacher, journalist, Disney magazine editor, summer camp counselor, and copywriter. She lives in southwestern New Hampshire with her family and her cat, Ranger. She is currently hard at work on a novel, and it was such a joy to chat with Becky. We are honored to host this literary teacher and talent on this episode of Intrinsic Drive. All right, Becky, it's so wonderful to be with you today. Thank you so much for taking the time. I know you're so busy, for coming to Intrinsic Drive. Welcome.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to be here. And honestly, I take the mornings kind of easy. So starting now is perfect. I'm coming to you fresh.
Yeah. Awesome. 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 Well, take us right into your genesis, Becky. Think about the beginning of your journey and any inciting moments that started the journey for you.
You know, what's so interesting. I was thinking about this morning, and there were two moments when I was a teenager and very early adult that shaped how I think about systems. In a minute, I'll go back a little earlier because the land where I grew up is really important. But these were really on my mind this morning. I was in high school and I was with a friend named Ethan, who was really, 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 really bright. And we were talking about some math problem. And he said, oh, it's probably this because these kinds of textbooks do that. And that was the first time I had ever heard anyone, especially in math, apply a principle across a whole set of things. To me, you know, math is not my native ability. So it had always been like every experience is new and different. And they're trying to trick me,
right?
But which I think is how people feel about writing related things too. If it doesn't feel natural to them,
that's right.
Everything is easier for him now, in terms of this one thing,
right?
That has stayed with me for almost 30 years. Understanding that there often is a principle of logic, of preference, of culture that's behind, that's organizing everything. You figure that out. I mean, you still have to live. Right. It doesn't take away the troubles, right. But you're oriented in a higher level.
Yes.
And then the other moment was very similar. I was working in a kitchen at the same high school. They had a summer program. And I watched this young man named Noah, who was so efficient loading the dishwasher, you know, these industrial dishwashers, the Hobart.
Yes. I've ran one of those as a busboy.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And he was able to organize the things coming in and where they needed to go in the trays and getting them through in a way that was actually beautiful because it was clean. You know, it was a clean line and it didn't take long and it didn't waste water.
Yes.
And I thought, I have never been able to do that. I've never been able to look at objects and understand how they go together. So I can't say that I'm very good at that in particular, but that as a mindset. Like there's a way that all of this material can fit together beautifully and look good and function well. And so those two things, I think, actually inform my writing and how I think about writing, yes. Which is with when you have a piece of work, like someone's working on a story or a novel, there is a larger intelligence around it that's affecting how the characters talk, that's affecting how they relate to each other, that's affecting their problems. And you don't have to know it exactly. You often can't know it, but it's there. Like, it's there as your companion.
Yes.
And so that's really stayed with me. And that when you're editing, when you're working with work in revision, there's a way that the pieces can go together where they feel, they have that feeling of Noah Elbers,
you know, right,
in like 1999, whatever year it was. And it was right. Earlier than that, like 1996.
Okay.
Like putting dishes through the Hobart.
Yeah.
So those two things made me think about systems in different ways. And they've really been on my mind lately. And they come on top of an experience growing up on the coast of Maine in a little town called Hancock,
okay.
Which is not, you know, like there are more fancy towns. Camden is really fancy, right. Rockport.
Yeah,
you
know, I know that one. Yeah.
Yeah. And so this is a kind of a little bit further up, a little bit scruffier. But when you grow up with a presence like the ocean there every day, you have a sense of, there's a sense of humility that's baked in.
Right.
You know, my brother, one of my younger brother is now, he works on the water. He's been a lobsterman for many years.
Wow. Yeah.
And his sense of humility is different than mine.
Right. Right.
I don't think he would put it in those terms, but right. You have a sense of being around something big
yeah.
And forceful
yes.
That is bigger than your mind can handle.
Yeah.
And so I think that sense of scale, has been really, really important to me, and in a way that I don't even recognize most of the time, and a little bit to my detriment.
No, that
because I'm always like, yeah. I'm this big, and I right. am in this huge field, but to get things done, you kind of need to have a little more arrogance at times, you know, or connection to a motivating force of some sort. So that's been that's actually a kind of shadow side of yeah. that for me. And then my parents, are both artists, one visual artist and the other a musician and actor.
Okay.
Both frustrated in their longings to live their art, for many reasons.
Yeah.
So I inherited both their drive and deep connection to expression and the many, many, many compromises that they've made consciously and unconsciously just to live.
Right.
Right. And so those are kind of, so though I think that's one of the big stories that I'm living out being their daughter.
Yeah.
So Genesis wise, I feel like that gets the breadth of it.
Yeah. And it feels like you're unwinding some of those stories now just by yeah. that awareness and that idea of surrender, like the metaphor yeah. of the ocean, like it or not. Your brother yeah. and you, maybe you realizing it more, but have to surrender yeah. or acquiesce to this force larger than us. And so this is beautiful mm-hmm. time for you. And maybe the COVID time or the pandemic time helps us mm-hmm. sometimes to go deeper into these old stories
yes.
that are, you know,
yes.
become actually a gift, you know, as you
for
know
sure.
from the writing. In the ascent, now, Becky, when did you feel yourself rising in your craft now as a writer, or where, how old are you now in this point of your story? Is it still maybe high school? And when was it an event that made that path clear to you?
I think some of us are just born with neurons that are really happy with a pen and paper.
Yeah.
And it's not, you know, it's not even that special. It's just the way it's put together.
Yeah,
you know?
That's right.
So stories, making little books, having a pen at hand, narrating life, which I think is also kind of a coping mechanism for a lot of us. So sort of my mother would say, Becky, I'm going to go out and pick green beans. And I would add, she said, so that kind of like living the yeah. novel.
Wow.
kind of thing was just in there.
Yeah. Wow. Makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. In a creative way and in a coping way.
It's great. No, it's fabulous yeah. for what you do. It's such a high merit.
And so then when I was in high school, I started writing poetry, as one often does, and happened upon a teacher who nurtured that with particular technical skills and attention and sort of belief in the work. And so that was a real cresting when I was 17, 18, that ended up getting attention, that reaped rewards, followed by a big crash. So I was very young and didn't know at all at any way what it meant to be a poet or a writer in a day-to-day sense outside of that year of high school, year and a half of high school. And attention is lovely, but it's very rare, and it's really seductive.
Yes.
And not having that dopamine hit meant it felt like I didn't have anything. So going to college, not having any skills, not having any models of what it meant to practice writing, the gift really shriveled up. The experience of it was just total loss. It was really, really hard. It felt like imagination was gone. God was gone. Hope was gone. And this is a really classic. I've since observed over the years that this happens. We have the crisis.
Yes.
And often in the early 20s, So it lasted a long time, lasted about 10 years, 10 or 15 years. And then when I came to gatelist writing in that first couple of years with Suzanne, I recognized that I had found something special and that was going to help me. And I really, really, really resisted it.
Okay. Oh, wow. Really?
for about 4 years, like hard resistance.
Wow.
Even as I was drawn to it again and again and again.
So now you were enrolled in the academy during those 4 years that you were in, but you were resisting still.
Wow. Yeah. Right. In 2016, I did the first iteration of the academy. Okay. So I was doing it then. I was going to retreats. I was going to salons.
Yeah.
And then I did the gateless teacher training, the week-long time when you get trained in the method.
Exactly.
And that was the turning point. When finally all of the accumulated years and experiences were able to integrate. And partly it was a gift that Suzanne Kingsbury gave to me. She gave me a job. She said, Becky, why don't you be the chaplain for the week? And I understood it.
Yep.
I understood that job. I knew when it needed to happen and what I was going to do. And I also had a really nice room. So those two things together.
I can see you doing an amazing job with that.
However it was received, it gave me a place to belong. And so a lot of things could settle. And I write about this, you might've read it in the bio, but that last night of that training, we were swimming in the Long Island Sound and I swam over to Suzanne. I said, Suzanne, this is ecstatic. And Suzanne very often will promise the moon and the stars in salon, like we're going to blow the roof off. All the things, like she has really, she has no problem touching the ecstasy of writing. And I'd always be like, I don't think so. So I swam over to her and said, this is ecstatic. And she said, it only took you 4 effing years, Becky.
That's amazing.
And then it was some more years of just living. But I feel like I'm in not even a plateau, but just a place of growth, of continued growth and confidence in the page and what I can do there and the discomfort I can tolerate. That's a good time.
No, that makes total sense. It feels like that was a lot of your discoveries, all these things. And any other mentors, your high school teacher, then there was that gap with the poetry. And then of course, Suzanne Kingsbury emerges and she's been our mentor for writing and just amazing. Any other mentors or teachers or coaches that come to mind now?
There's a woman in Guilford, Vermont, named Veranda Porch. That is her name. And I didn't study directly with her. I went to a few sessions that she led and a community project, art project I participated in. But her example as a woman living her life as a poet and using that in service to other people and continuing to create all the time. Oh, you know, it put something in my mind and someone I really respect and admire. She was a really big one. And then the leader
is possible as a profession.
Yeah, this is possible. You know, yes.
Yeah, that's really beautiful for you. Yeah. Yeah.
There was a woman who leads a community chorus over in Brattleboro, Becky Graber.
Okay.
And that was similar, a different discipline, but really similar, like beautiful combination of artistic discovery and expression and service. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Just a lovely, lovely human. And this is a little sillier, but I worked at a summer camp for a lot of years. And the first couple of years there, I saw women just a little older than I was who were immensely strong, physically, intellectually, and joyously strong.
Yeah.
And I really hadn't seen that before. I think I kind of grew up feminist. That's just the orientation mm-hmm. that I was born into. Mm-hmm. But I really hadn't seen a community where women were powerful.
Yeah.
And that rewired my brain. And I also kind of parted ways from that high school mentor, which was important for my development. So
growth. Because all these new ones are coming to light and it's moving you such mm-hmm. in a powerful direction, coming into mm-hmm. your own powers, showing you mm-hmm. what's possible. In the drives, Becky, what's urging you forward? And what are some of the external and internal forces and motivations during this time in your life?
Well, external really is really the practical ones of providing for my family.
Yes.
I have a son. Yeah. I have one child who's 10 now.
10. Wow.
And that really does give you an organizing principle.
Absolutely.
And I have a beautiful husband. And so living up to that relationship, is those two relationships are probably the biggest things.
That's great. And he's a writer as well. Your husband is a writer.
My husband is. Yeah.
That's
he is
awesome.
Really, really talented writer.
Oh, so great. So that's, you can really understand each other's space and being able to have that creative time within the union of being together. That's really.
Yeah.
Nice.
I think that does happen. And I think I've learned how to do that and still be a present partner, you know, learning how to show up for someone and still be yourself. That's been a real beautiful part of our growing. Not always beautiful in execution, but definitely beautiful in result.
That's great. That's great.
And then the internal motivators, you know, I don't know why. It's hard for me to admit, but I feel called to write the book. I feel called to write my book.
Great.
And I would never doubt it for a second for anyone else. I would see it, celebrate it. It would be as natural as a leaf on a tree. And of course, for me, I'm like, I feel like I have to apologize for it or doubt, discount it. You know, just the nonsense protection that's in our heads. But I don't really control it. I don't have a read for it, but man,
I'm so happy to hear this because you are such a beautiful writer. So for selfish reasons, as readers, we want to read your book. So thank you for understanding that at this point, for that coming into that space. And I know you mentioned that period where you were kind of away from the page and there mm-hmm. was a stuck 10, 15 years from high school mm-hmm. to college. Was this the time you were at Westland University at this time? Okay. Mm-hmm. And does that feel like more of your fall, the lowest moment in your career mm-hmm. overall? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That feels
absolutely.
Nice. Yeah.
I was really I went to Barnard College for a year and probably would have really loved it if I'd stayed, but the city was a lot.
Yeah.
It was a lot. Yeah. I didn't really fit in at Wesleyan. I think a lot of, you know, I think it happens in middle age too. Like you've done certain things for a certain number of years and they've been successful. Now all of those strategies don't work anymore. Right. There's no charming the teachers. There's being a good girl really isn't enough. You know, nobody cares that much that you're quiet and sweet, you know? So, and everybody's smart, you know, everybody was smart there. There wasn't a place to fill.
Mm-hmm.
And it was college in a lot of ways can be shallow. It can be pretty shallow unless you're dialed in. I feel like the people who knew what they loved were able to dial in and get a lot of value.
Yes.
But if you don't know, you're just kind of hanging out there, taking these classes and just yeah. didn't
work. If you don't have your family yet, if you don't have your tribe yeah. yet, and you're not yeah. energized. For me, it was mostly yeah. athletics. Because I had the athletics, I had that built-in family. Then I had the terrible injury with the scoliosis, and that was heart-wrenching. But still, I had that family, even though I wasn't able to compete for some of those years. But then that became my path, moving through that challenge. You know, so it's like it's so. But I know what you mean. There's such a disconnect, and gosh, isn't education just so fractured now? And you see this new school that's coming up that's very exciting. This University of Austin, which is based on the St. John's education, classical education, where they're going to make it for half. They've raised a crazy amount of money, and they're going to make it for half of what some of these schools are charging. Wow. So watch out. They're on your trail. It's good. There's good stuff coming for the next generation.
And I will say in this time of college, I did learn to play the guitar and I wrote a lot of songs. I was still doing, and that was kind of what
I'm sure
saved my heart. And I had one really wonderful teacher named Elizabeth Bobrick.
Okay.
Who taught Greek, which I took. So
that's a blessing. That's a saving grace. I think you covered it, but looking at the pivot and what steered you back on course and turned you around, was this finding Gateless, even though at first you were reticent to jump all the way in? Was it the academy in that moment, you know, being with Suzanne and finally getting it when you really were trained as a Gateless teacher now? Mm-hmm. Was that you felt like that moment that really steered you back?
I think that, yes, absolutely. And the one thing that precluded that was leaving my job in 2010 or 11, and then getting work through our friend Terry Trespecio. So starting to subcontract with her with freelance work. And so I was self-employed.
Yeah.
And I think the formal work environment actually was really hard for me. I think it's for a lot of people. It's it's going to be rough on the nervous system.
Yeah. So, especially growing up in a creative household and, you know, very different.
Yeah. Yep. So, so that was a big shift. And my son was one or two. So another huge shift. And I had this steady marriage. So all of that together.
Yeah. No, that's amazing. And if we looked at a rollback, if you had the opportunity, what would you redo or do differently, if anything?
I'm very curious what life would be like if I'd stayed at Barnard College.
Okay.
Because I wouldn't have gone to the summer camp. I wouldn't have learned to play guitar. I mean, who knows? But that's a real sliding doors moment for me. I really wish that I had been able to see the wisdom and the power in my female teachers a little earlier. I really didn't. Really, really loved my male teachers and writers and found a lot of power and inspiration there. But just because of history, you know, there was a way that part of me wasn't going to figure out how to live in this body with only those interlocutors. So I wonder sometimes what would have been like if that other high school teacher had been like, oh, I have something to learn here that's going to help me lock in.
Yes.
And sometimes I wish I'd been a little bit braver about adventure. You know, other friends would go off to Athens, the ones, you know, they would be really lucky and they would get a study abroad opportunity and they would go for it. Or they would do, they would have some experience that would let them do a wilderness trip out in Utah. And sometimes I wish I had something like that.
Yeah. Do you have a heart for travel? Do you, like, let's say the world was more open now, you would be traveling more with you and your family, or are now more creating this home of introverts, as you said. I love that because I live with two extreme introverts and I'm sort of a half and half now, but I was a very extreme extrovert. And so I understand that. So yeah. What do you think that would be for you?
I would really, really love to do a multi-day backpacking trip enough and fit enough to have it not be miserable, or not to have the miserable parts dominate.
Yeah.
I would really love that. I'm a terrible traveler otherwise. It's really stressful and overwhelming. I think I could get better with practice, but going kayaking for a week or being in the Green Mountains for a week. I would love to be that person.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll have to get with Bob and Christopher and make plans. And you can use me as your physical trainer. I'm happy to do the musculoskeletal health part. And, and then you can help me with the writing. We can do an exchange.
Yeah. Perfect.
A good year for that, because that feels very strong for you to go to these places and open up to that. Yeah. I think you covered sort of the anvil, the decision that forged you, defining moment, moment there at the academy retreat, or when you were at the teacher's training. But your journey, Becky, what's most important to you now, and what does the road ahead look like for you, and what's next?
Well, that was my cat who has some opinions. He might chime in again. He's filling in the gap because he's like, Becky, just say it. I think it's to write the book. I was reading something by George Saunders yesterday, who is brilliant and wise and compassionate. And as I was reading, I was like, wait a minute. I think I kind of wrote this in my whatever email. Like, but why is this so much better? Because it was. It had something more full. It had something fuller in it. And I thought, well, George Saunders is an artist and a writer, and he's given time and love and skill and practice to that part of himself. And yeah, he's gotten published, which is part of it, but doesn't seem like from the outside that he's sacrificing that essential part of him in order to serve other people. And I said, well, Becky, you are, you don't want to, and you're really working hard to change that, but you're in a place this month where you're not close to the work.
Yes.
And your service isn't as good. It's not bad. Like, no one's going to notice but me, but I know
Right.
I feel the anger building and the resentment and that edge. Not that when I'm working on my work, everything's perfect. It's not a binary by any means.
No,
but I'm different.
Yes,
and I produce better work overall.
Yeah.
So the journey forward is the art.
I'm so grateful you're voicing that now, and I'm in that same place, and I think that's why we've connected. Is that maybe I'm 3/4 of a way, and then and then there's all the inner critics that keep, sort of the reptilian mind or whatever it is, that comes back and says, it's your middle of this health crisis, and you've got to move forward on this element of your life, and you've got to get more into this part of the work. And so then there's always the distraction, and it's insidious. Right. And I love what you've created that we both need to use for ourselves, because I think these, this idea of the 7 ways to love your writing when it feels like it's a mess. And, it's a beautiful mini book here. And the 7 steps, I found myself going back to it. And I was a little stuck a couple of days ago about something. And all of a sudden I did the 10-minute prompt, that you had. And I love the idea of this doable stimulus idea.
Yeah.
And we use a lot of that in athletics and training. Yes. People get so far outside themselves and think, like Terry's analogy on TV, she says, and I'm a marathoner, so I get this from a very deep level. Says, don't run a marathon, Terry, don't run a marathon if you haven't been running. I say don't run a marathon if you haven't been running 100 to 140 miles a week. I never had a wall. Like, just love the writing. And so sometimes I forget and I get so it's this outcome driven. It's the same demon in any process. And they say, got to go back to love the work and all of a sudden find time. And we can't make time in life, but we could just allow and give ourselves permission.
Yeah.
And shedding those old ideas that, okay, you know what? I could get up a little extra early and have those golden hours or I could, you know, there's so much stuff, or I could say, you know what, guys, just give me 20. It doesn't have to be this big deal that I have to write 2000 words every day. I love the fact that you said, look, start with 100 words.
Yeah.
So I'm on your wait list here. please accept me. We, you know, obviously we've met in the Academy and we're just, fans, devotees, and dear friends of Suzanne Kingsbury. I was just texting with Suzanne yesterday.
Yeah.
And she's always in my heart and mind, and Terry. And, you know, it feels like you all are the people that got me through the health crisis. Without you all as a community, I don't think I would have made it. And it was just because all these devastating things were happening. And then, you know, having the solace in the word and understanding that. And getting back to that. And, you know, I went to journalism school, but, you know, didn't really do much with it. Was a co-author in books with my father, but it was more with our work. And it wasn't the literary craft work. Mm-hmm. So it was more technical. And so this is a whole new. And so I'm just saying, look, it's a charge to both of us. There's a reason we're here today, and we're going to get these books out there. And I love the fact that along the way, see, you're helping others. That's what it was with me and my athletics, is I was injured for the 2 years, had the scoliosis, and not able to run and train. But then I found this work of old-fashioned kinesiotherapy and started to put all these therapies together. And then I was helping others as I was helping myself. Mm. So it was really fun to be able to receive to share idea, you know, that wheel of coming back. And so we have the good people that are givers like us have to learn more to receive.
Yeah.
That's our shtick, right?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
I love your journey, and I can't wait to do the salons with you. People that don't understand the writing salons that we've learned from Suzanne Kingsbury and the Gateless, is there's a writing prompt given, right? No, you go ahead and explain it, because you're the teacher. I'm just,
all right. We can tag team if I leave something out.
good, please.
Right. So there's that little opening meditation time to get people into their bodies, or just breathing a little more slowly.
Right. Take a step back.
And then there's a prompt, which can be anything, but sometimes goes more toward the sensory memory, the sensory.
Yeah.
And then a timed writing time. And then everybody comes back and we have this set of rules that hold the container for how we talk about each other's work and how we share it. And that's, to me, that's where the, I'm always, whenever someone's read, give and then feedback, I'm like, oh, okay, now we're in salon. Like, now
that's
we're here.
That's right. That's what I feel.
So, yeah. Those rules really are what keep us in the gateless place.
Yeah.
So there's reading aloud and giving very discerning, careful, positive feedback. And then we close. And then the circle closes.
Yes.
And everybody goes off to do what they're going to do.
And focusing on what's strong in the work, right? And looking at that brain science that Suzanne has been able to collate and bring together. It's like, okay, there's a lot of research that says our brains go to that positive place, that reinforcement, and it sort of changes the neural outputs. And then we start to see things that are strong in other people's work. And there's an amazing upload of merit and craft tools. I noticed if I look at the first two, when we started the Academy that year that we were in there together several years ago, it was like, wow, my writing was so flat at the beginning, you know, the first couple months. And then all of a sudden by the third month, it was different.
Yeah.
It was different. And then all of a sudden, I think I was able to read. We have these readings, right, where people will read their work, and it's sort of everybody gets a turn, and then everybody does the feedless, the gateless comment on that. And it was like, it was in June or something. And by then the work was, had a depth of field that was different that I'd never experienced. Wow. And it was really fun to be in that. But more importantly, just read all these other writers that have been doing it so much longer, like you and Terry and, oh my gosh, it's just so beautiful. And Laura Belgray and just so many, I mean, amazing. And it all came from that, the, like you said, the structure.
Yeah,
like you learned early on in high school. The fluidity, the synchronicity, and the beauty of movement through the page.
Yeah, it's really true. Yeah.
If we had to look at in a rearview mirror, any parting gems of advice you'd like to leave for us today about your process?
One came to mind when I was just, when we were just talking about this, how this last month has been a little squeezed for me, a little cold.
Yep.
And I think it's that it's not a bad time. It's not like the spirit has left me. Right. I don't feel abandoned. And I don't even feel like the book is suffering or that I'm suffering. It's I'm not totally enjoying every moment of it.
Right.
But like the book still feels very present, and the sense of me being connected to the page or the word or to spirit or whatever that language is, it's still with me.
Yep.
It's not like I have to perform in order to earn it. And so there's not like an on off switch of where my creativity is alive or it's dead there. In terms of the book, it's in a contracted place and it's happening elsewhere. So I think that the gem is that the spirit doesn't leave you. It's with you. And the expression of that creativity is changes for, you know, from month to month or season to season. And that's something I'm still working on, which is why I'm a little hesitant, because I very easily get into like, I'm not doing it right, which I really don't think is true.
Right.
I really don't think it's true.
But so maybe I think in that pause, maybe in that pause, there's a gathering and more depth or more information is being downloaded into that space. And so that portal, that resonance is growing.
Yeah. Yes.
I think it is what it feels like to me for you when I'm tuning into that. Is that okay? Oh, there's an anger that, okay, in the moment, we're not able to do. We'd like to just be able, in a perfect utopian world, sit down and have the days roll out. But that's not real life. And so sometimes that sharpens the sword a bit. So now we have to use more craft tools to use these windows of okay, 10 minutes or, oh, I started 100 words. Then I pause, I come back, breathe, reflect. All those strategies that you have in the mini book. And I think it's fabulous as a real distillation. I think it's a distillation of the Gateless Work by Suzanne Kingsbury. I think it's a really wonderful so this is really beautiful.
And then the other one, I think you probably know even more than I, but I started taking voice lessons again last month.
Oh, great.
Good. And what I learned right away is that sound is best when the body is relaxed and the effort is really focused on only a few places, but the rest of the body is just totally relaxed.
That's right.
And then I watch singers and I'm like, oh, like they're singing about something devastating and their body's totally relaxed.
Right.
And I was like, oh, effort isn't tension. You know, effort isn't contraction necessarily, or it's very specific. It's controlled and everything is better when it's surrounded by relaxation.
So totally. We say
that's my gem for myself.
No, that's so we say that in running. Speed comes from relaxation. Any part of tension, like a sprinter coming out of the blocks, if they're in tension, sometimes we've seen that even with their hands near the starting blocks on the track, they can have tension through the wrist. It goes up the forearm all the way into the rotator cuff and locks up their back.
Yes.
You know, so it's amazing how it manifests in the body, and you just have to continue to work on the structure, right? Yeah. What's the alignment? So we have the form, and then you let go. Then you know how to paint, and then you just let the brush go. And I think that's what's so cool about the academy is we're constantly told and taught these craft tools, but then there's a lot of us that, okay, it's a re-remembering. It's a let go and a re-remembering and just, okay, unfiltered. Don't worry about the grammar yet. You know, just get it down. Almost like Julia Cameron. Let's just roll write those morning pages. It's just so great. I'd like to bring awareness now to just love so much your podcast. Was listening to it this morning, and it's the Read to Me podcast by Becky Karish. And please go. It's on Apple, on iTunes, and probably a lot of other platforms, right? And go in there and rate, review, and subscribe to. It's just so beautiful to hear your just a magical voice, and I just loved how you went and dissected even Terry Trespicio's, our friend from the Academy, her new book, Unfollow Your Passion, and you went right to chapter 19, which I hadn't read the book yet. And so you went right to the juicy stuff, and you got and you really so beautiful. And then also to your salons and your writing process that you have, the mini book that I'd referenced, and it'll all be right in the liner notes, but please go in, and there's limited space. Now, when will you start your next, salon for this year or your writing coaching, platform?
The next 8-week series starts January 18th, and then there'll be a short break, and then there'll be another one starting in April.
Okay, January 18th, and then one more starting in April. And they're eight weeks. And is it two times a week that you meet, or once sometimes? There's different options. Is that correct?
Yes, people can choose once, twice, or three times a week.
That's awesome.
And then there are bonus writing craft seminars and visual storytelling seminars and editing things and lots of stuff to support the journey.
Yeah, and this is not just for writers, folks. This is for people that are doing entrepreneurial online things, people that are in business that want to learn how to come into the word, to understand how to convey any message. This same technique is because you'll learn the tools, you'll learn the structure, and you'll learn how to free up all those stories that you want to tell for whatever they are. Is that right?
Yeah, it's very open. There's no one has to prove themselves. In terms of their credentials or whether they deserve to be there, it's completely, you show up and participate in salons and everything, all the magic happens from that.
Yeah. I love that concept because you have a newbie next to someone that maybe felt blocked for so many years and had a longer than a 15-year hiatus next to a Terry with MFA, and they're all sharing stories. They all find that beauty in the page, and also it's a healing. I think what's really amazing is we learn through tough times like the health crisis is it just that process of journaling is a healing in itself. And so you learn how to have allocated space. It's creating that sacred space for that. And in busy lifestyles, we sure need that.
Yes, we really do. It changes things for people. It changes how they feel about their lives, and no guarantees, like not that you're going to go out and win the lottery, but it shifts something deep about how you feel about your life and how you feel about your power and responsibility in your life.
Yeah. I think it's a powerful meditation. Just like you said, what's a great way for writer's block? Take a walk. Writers are famous for walking. Mm-hmm. You know, for me, it's still able to do my running, even though it's not competitive now. It's a meditation, and a lot of the good lead outs I have in the runs, I'll come back and a lot like Jen Barrett would do too. She would say, "Oh, I would come back to my phone and I would do a text note." I would give myself a note.
Yes.
Because before the run, I'd give myself a little lead out. What did you call those?
Yes.
Anaphora. I love that word. Yeah. Anaphora. A literary tool where you repeat that line several times and then you come back to it and you have a whole process for that. I found myself doing that during the Academy after Jen had mentioned that in one of the talks, and or maybe it was one of the salons. And then I was doing that and it really helped supercharge me because then all of a sudden during that run, all of a sudden things would come up because I would give it an invocation, you know, sort of an invitation to, okay, where is the work? You know, what do you want to do? Not what I want to do, but what is it want to become? And I think that's one of the differences with beautiful writing. It's all inside of us. We don't even know it. And so Mary says, I want to get rid of the word writer. You know, I just want everybody should just be able to do this in a very pragmatic way. Becky, yes. It's been so beautiful to spend time with you. Thank you for being so gracious and the writer that you are. And it doesn't matter if the book never comes out, but I know that it will.
So thank you. Thank you, Phil.
It's there in you. And I'm so excited to know that it's happening.
Well, thank you for this conversation. That was like medicine. It was like, it was like a big, big, big pot of ginger, lemon and honey tea with just a splash of cayenne.
I love it.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for your listening.
Yes. No, thanks for being with us. Thanks for being with us. We appreciate you opting in, subscribing, and reviewing us, for thumbing us up and following us on socials, liking us. We like you. Drop us a note. Tell us what stories move you. For books, videos, resources, and more information, visit us at whartonhealth.com/shopwhartonhealth. And be sure to join us for the next episode of Intrinsic Drive.